And peoples with different systems and different values can live together in peace.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations.
Now we can see a new world coming into view, a world in which there is the very real prospect of a new world order. It is a big idea, a new world order, where diverse nations are drawn together in common cause to achieve the universal aspirations of mankind. Out of these troubled times, our fifth objective, a new world order, can emerge.
There is a chance for the President of the United States to use this disaster to carry out what his father, a phrase his father used, I think, only once and hasn't been used since, and that is a new world order.
There's a need for a new world order in the next few years. A solution will emerge that people will look into that cauldron and decide that they have to learn their limits. But I think that at the end of this administration, with all its turmoil, and at the beginning of the next, we might actually witness the creation of a new order.
After 1989, President Bush said, and it's a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order.
It is a new mindset that the world now needs. It is a real...
A part of that plan, of course, is to induce the gradual surrender of American sovereignty, piece by piece and step by step, to various international organizations, of which the United Nations is the outstanding but far from the only example. Now, here are the aims for the United States. One, greatly expanded government spending for every conceivable means of getting rid of ever larger sums of American money as wastefully as possible. Two, higher and then much higher.
You walk into this room at your own risk because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has patterned itself after every dictator who has ever planted the ripping imprint of a boot on the pages of history since the beginning of time. It has refinements, technological advances, and a more sophisticated approach.
They're set. Racing. The cat field on its way. Geneva and Chase
High. Snack. Animal.
Kangaroo.
And what's your favorite car, Australian?
All in.
Let me see. That's football, meat pies, kangaroos, and holding cows, huh?
Are you fair dinkum?
Is a chicken ad lib?
Are you rejujitch? Hey, Jeff, are you true?
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. Thank you for joining us once again from the land down under. My name's Leon Pittard, and I am the host of FairDinkumRadio.com. Thank you for joining us today as we continue to examine incredible changes taking place in the world we live in. We are here to question the narrative each week of the institutions of power that continue to shape our nations, our communities, and our families. Each week we monitor the progress and the development of the rebuilding of the Kingdom of Babylon, commonly called a New World Order. It is a new order of governance, economics, culture, and religion. With all of these aspects of the new order being built into a society and being implemented covertly without the consent of we the people. Each week we provide commentary and analysis and evidence from a biblical perspective as we watch the timeline of history unfold. We reveal a plan. We reveal an agenda by looking at the statements of the architects themselves to piece together on that timeline of history exactly what the Bible said would happen. That mystery Babylon, Babylon the Great, would be rebuilt and would be a mongrel amalgamation of kings, of bankers, of religion and culture, all conspiring to bring about a kingdom of darkness, a kingdom of force against we the people, with the aims to funnel the individual into this collective system by their own consent, by their own willingness to participate in the works of darkness. Well, the scripture tells us to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather to reprove them. And as we see the rebuilding of this kingdom of Babylon, we want to shine the light on the works of darkness, so that the true and faithful people, so that the honest people on this earth can come to the light and not abide in the darkness. I want to thank all of our supporters who support this broadcast. Thank you for helping us out each week. We are the only radio broadcast in Australia exposing the works of darkness of the New World Order and sharing the light of the gospel as the only true solution. As we look at this development of this kingdom, we see that the kingdom of Babylon that was separated by God way back thousands of years ago in the book of Genesis is being rebuilt today through the United Nations, through non-government organisations, and through governments of every nation, influenced heavily by secret societies, the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, Jewish secret societies, the Society of Jesus, the Jesuit Order, Islamic secret societies, Freemasonry, and all of the different legs of the octopus. Alexis de Tocqueville described this new society when he said that the society would develop this new kind of slavery, which would cover the surface of society with a network of complicated rules through which the most original minds and the most energetic characters cannot penetrate. It will compress and stupefy a people till each nation is reduced to nothing better than a flock of timid and industrious animals of which the government is the shepherd. And I'd like to propose to you, ladies and gentlemen, that that is where we are today. When we hear people like Peter Sutherland come out openly and say that I will ask the governments to cooperate, to recognise that sovereignty is an illusion. Now, we have often referred to the dream in Daniel 2. And on the timeline of prophecy, we see that we are at the feet and toes of that timeline dream. And the feet and toes are made up of a mongrel amalgamation of black and white. And today we are going to focus on the invasion of Europa. The invasion of white Europe by the invaders from the Middle East and Africa. Peter Sutherland, the United Nations Special Representative of the Secretary General for International Migration, is one of the movers and shakers right at the helm of this massive invasion that is destroying Europe. He said that sovereignty is an absolute illusion that has to be put behind us. Now, in our opening clip, I played there the 10 aims of communism. The very first one was to remove national borders. Here's Peter Sutherland, UN Special Representative, on international migration, saying that sovereignty is an illusion. We must put it behind us. It's gone. Those days are finished. Here it is, friends. This is the New World Order. This is the Kingdom of Babylon, whose aim is to destroy all unique culture. Every nation should be able to keep their culture where it is, and not to enforce it on the rest of the world. He said, we have to work together and cooperate together to make a better world. And that means taking on some of the old shibboleths. Well, of course. That means removing culture. That's what that language is. Taking on some of the old historic memories and images of our own country and recognising we're part of humankind. Because under the technocracy of the Kingdom of Babylon, ladies and gentlemen, we are to become numbers of a world system. We become global citizens, not Australian citizens, not citizens of the United States or Canada or Britain or England or Europe, Germany, Hungary. No, no, no. We become an international citizen. Because if you want to retain your culture, you will be classed as a neo-Nazi. You will be classed as a far-right extremist. That is the narrative of what is being projected today within mass media. That if you love Australia, and if you don't want Australia to become Islamic, if you don't want Australia to become African, you will be classed as a neo-Nazi racist. Because society has become conditioned over decades to accept the forced multicultural agenda, to the point where Peter Sutherland can say in 2015, sovereignty is finished and no one blinks an eyelid. Governments are like rabbits in the headlights. Some of them know, some of them don't. Most of them are just like the people have been completely conditioned. We talked about the clergy plan. This is what the clergy plan was. The man of the future will be of mixed race. Daniel 2 says it's black and white, trying to blend together. And by the way, the Bible says that that doesn't work, that what that creates is tension and warfare, which we'll get to in a moment. The races and classes of today will gradually disappear due to the elimination of space, time and prejudice. So, clergy outlined that there would have to be a removal of prejudice. How do they do that? Well, you can look at the roots of anti-Semitism for that. And all of the discrimination laws we have today stem, ultimately, from the source, anti-Semitism. He says the Eurasian Negroid race of the future. The what? The Eurasian Negroid race. That's the culture mix, friends, between Europe and Africa. Similar in appearance to the ancient Egyptians, will replace the diversity of peoples and the diversity of individuals. Instead of destroying European Judaism, Europe, against her will, note the words, against her will, refined and educated this people, driving them to their future status as a leading nation through this artificial evolutionary process. It's not surprising that the people that escaped from the ghetto prison became the spiritual nobility of Europe. Thus, the compassionate care given by Europe created a new breed of aristocrats. This happened when the European feudal aristocracy crashed because of the emancipation of the Jews. And this was Richard Coudenhove Kalergi, and in 1922 he founded the Pan-European Movement in Vienna, which aimed to create a new world order. Now in Luke 21:25, one of the signs of the times in the timeline of prophecy, as we look at the end game period, the time of the end, is upon the earth distress of nations. And I want to tell you, friends, we are looking right now at the distress of nations. And further proving that the clergy plan is a crisis by design, the Hungarian Prime Minister reveals social engineering role by George Soros, a Jew, in EU refugee run. Startling new claims have been levied by Hungarian PM Viktor Orban concerning the role of George Soros in Europe's migrant crisis. Orban contends that Soros, founder and chair of the Open Society Foundations, has been a part of a circle of activists that have inadvertently become part of this international human smuggling network. Well, I would go a bit further than what Prime Minister Orban says in inadvertently, and I would say has conspired. And we have proven in the past, in our last broadcast on the work of NGOs, that the Open Society Foundation funds, supports and trains NGO actors in regime change right around the world. They are ones behind colour revolutions, behind violent uprisings against legitimate governments. The latest declaration by Orban immediately recalls the misguided machinations of the Occupy movement in 2011, as well as the Soros-funded process in Ferguson, Missouri, last summer. Two events that were designed to push naive participants into violent action and social unrest. This is exactly what has happened in Europe as a result of this year's migrant crisis. Now, Soros has been involved in the Ukraine since 1989, when he founded the Ukraine International Renaissance Foundation that provided more than $100 million to Ukraine NGOs 2 years before the fall of the Soviet Union. The billionaire is connected to several NGOs in Ukraine that advocate closer ties to the EU and aided the Euromaidan movement that toppled Viktor Yanukovych's government last February. In March, he criticised the EU for paying too much attention to Greece's economic problems and promised to invest $1 billion of his own money in Ukraine. Now, here we see that George Soros' fingerprints and his foundations and associated funded organisations are all over the unrest, including the invasion into Europe. And this is what Prime Minister Orban called out. Now, to prove this case further, one of our listeners, Sally Ann, sent me this from Sky News. Sky finds handbook for EU-bound migrants. The rough guide contains maps, tips, phone numbers for organisations which will help refugees make the perilous crossing. Refugees arriving in Greece on people smugglers' boats are given migrants' handbooks packed with tips, maps, phone numbers and advice about getting to Europe. Now, the story goes on to say that there is well-organised NGOs that are actually facilitating this European invasion. They're there with the welcoming mat. They've got their arms wide open saying, come and invade our country. One of these groups, called W2EU, on their website it says, we welcome all travellers on their difficult trip and wish you all a good journey because freedom of movement is everybody's right. It goes on to say that they aim to offer contacts and counselling to refugees and migrants. At the outer borders of Europe, people are refused entry. They are imprisoned and deported. Nevertheless, people are coming. W2EU is providing you information to come to Europe in your struggle for a better life. And so what we see is that all of these NGOs and actors are very important parts of the machinery in implementing this destruction of sovereign borders in Europe. Now, in Australia, we have one thing in our favour at the moment, and that is a lot of water around us. And a previous Prime Minister that basically put a halt to this invasion within Australia. Now they've made it legal. In other words, this year there'll be 12,000 refugees accepted from Syria, on top of the 200,000 that come here every year anyway. Not 200,000 refugees, 200,000 migrants of whoever wants to come basically applies and gets here, right? So what we see happening is that the complicated network of laws will be changing from an invasion, an immigrant invasion, to a legalised transfer. Now, someone that's written about this very clearly is Ingrid Carlqvist from Sweden. Now, Ingrid's story is very interesting. I hope to get her on the program sometime, where she's had to flee Sweden. She's had to flee Sweden as a journalist because the Swedish apparatus has become so corrupted. She has been under death threat for so long that she's had to basically move out. Now, she writes for the Gatestone Institute, and she has a very good article here called Sweden Close to Collapse. She writes that if the wave of migrants keep coming, in 10 to 15 years, Swedes will be a minority in their own country, and that there is, in fact, an exchange of populations going on should be clear in any sober assessment. Now, that's basically what we need to look at, ladies and gentlemen, is that this is an exchange of populations. This is not a refugee problem. This is not a refugee crisis. This is a invasion. It is a transfer of populations. It is a change of populations from the third world into white Christian Europe. That's the facts. And the people that are coming in are not Christian. In the main, they are Muslim. And so what we are going to see is a strategy of tension play out. Lars Hedegaard, one of Ingrid's associates, says the final consequence of Sweden's immigration policy is that the economy will collapse. Because who is going to pay for it all? And economic breakdowns, once they happen, always happen very fast. In the last 2 weeks, more than 1,000 unaccompanied refugee children have arrived from Germany via ferry to Sweden. More than half of them have now vanished and are listed as missing. For the last few weeks, the central train station in Sweden's third largest city, Malmo, has been overrun with migrants. And the volunteers that for the first few days showed up with food, water and clothes have now gone home and lost interest. Now, Sweden is one of the more advanced socialist systems within the West. And if you want to know what socialism looks like, you need to just look at Sweden and look how it is collapsing. On October 9, Prime Minister Stefan Löfven said that Sweden is in a state of crisis. He wanted to convey to the world that Swedish people, that Sweden is facing one of the largest humanitarian efforts in Swedish history, and that there is no more housing available and migrants should be prepared to live in tents. That's with the winter coming. Now, the fact that the government is now talking about housing migrants in tents is a signal to Sweden that even though Sweden projects itself as the most humanitarian, and I would put it, this is false humanitarian because the socialist system is really about the transfer of wealth under the guise of humanitarianism and the destruction of culture. In 2014, Lars Hedegaard, the Danish historian, prophetically remarked in the book Dangerous Words that the economic breakdown of a nation always happens quickly. He said this: if there is any lesson to be drawn from history, it is that what you do not think will happen does, time and again. The final consequence of the West, and above all Sweden's immigration policy, is that the economy will collapse, because who is going to pay for it? Who is going to pay for it? And this is a question, friends, that is never asked by mass media. And under all socialism, this question's never asked. Swedish government at the moment is borrowing money abroad to pay for immigration, just like we are borrowing money in Australia to pay for our interest on our debt. This is the aim. The aim is to bankrupt countries, to further enslave them to central banking systems, and to a socialist system that keeps going round and round in corner and never ends. In the shadow of 1.5 million migrants expected to arrive this year in Germany, the EU's largest country, population of 81 million, so there is basically 10% of the population has arrived this year. Migrants are also pouring into a rather smaller Sweden. Geographically, Sweden is large but consists mainly of forests and wilderness, and fewer than 10 million people live in the country. Now, there is now talk of 180,000 asylum seekers coming to Sweden in 2015. And they're talking about having to actually house the people in tents throughout this coming winter. Now, we go to that to a more recent article. Sweden's migration minister warned refugees that if they don't find their own accommodation, they would be deported back to Germany or Denmark. Now, the fact is, friends, there's nowhere to house these people. There are Swedish people themselves, just like there is in Australia, Australian people, who do not have housing. There is tens of thousands of homeless in Australia already. And we are taking in 12,000 refugees this year. Where are they going to be housed? Well, the obvious answer is that government is going to provide housing for them from you, the people. They are going to buy houses, build them, make them, develop them for the influx. This is what the Sweden migration minister is saying. The news comes as Europe's refugee influx had depleted IKEA's stockpile of beds. There's a major store there, and IKEA can't provide enough bedding for the amount of people coming into the country. The Swedish government told media on Friday that it will be no longer able to provide housing for refugees and migrants arriving in the country. And so they've said, well, we can't provide you any beds. We've run out of beds. There's nowhere else to go. And as we go to the 30th, 2 weeks ago, Swedish politician says country is facing collapse due to mass influx of refugees. Now, see, friends, I'm only talking about this one snapshot here of Sweden. He said, the foreign minister, Margot Wallström, who adds the EU needs to do more to take the strain off Stockholm. The northern European country expects to accommodate around 190,000 by the turn of the year. Now, an interesting thing about these articles is, when you look at these articles, every month the numbers change and get bigger. A month ago, they said they were going to receive 170,000. Now it's 190,000. That is because the influx just keeps growing. Now, of course, with the influx of the invaders all around the world, there is a rise in tension, and this is the strategy. Now, I'd like to have a snapshot at one of the camps that has developed in France at Calais. And this is, of course, at the entry of the tunnel which goes to England. Now, many of the invaders are wanting to get to England and not stay in France. And you may have seen some of the footage. And I'll tell you what, who would want to be a truck driver there? Where you've got thousands of young men trying to jump trucks to get across the channel through this tunnel. And they're trying to, they're breaking in, and many of the trucks have been opened up at the other end with full of dead bodies. Now, there's a lot of these reports that are not coming through your mass media, if that's where you get your information, in the West. And there's a very good reason for this. These reports are hidden because the media is basically on side with the clergy plan, with the forced multicultural agenda, with no borders, with global citizenship initiatives, and they will not report adverse effects like the massive increase of rape in Sweden. And I'll bring you those statistics shortly. The massive increase of crime with the invasion taking place. And if you look at the country statistics of the most dangerous countries and the murder rates by country, what you will find is that the countries that these people are coming with have the highest murder rates in the world, i.e. the Middle East and Africa. And these are the people, 75-80% young men, aged between 20 and 35, that are coming into Europe and invading Europa. Listen to this.
Clashes have broken out between police and migrants in the French port town of Calais for a third night running.
Okay, go back to the jungle. Go back to the jungle.
Around 200 migrants threw rocks and other projectiles at police while also trying to block roads. The security forces responded with tear gas and water cannons.
Now, this picture is taking place all across Europe. This picture is being taken place all across Europe, where the invaders have an attitude that everything must be provided for them. And if any security forces or any police or any locals get in the way, they will be violently attacked. Now, friends, this is a war. This is not about humanitarianism. This is a war. This is the opening of Europa to foreign invaders without the nation's people lifting a firearm, without them even putting up a resistance. And when they try and put up some resistance, they are categorised as racist. And here we have these people inflicting violence on the locals and police. And you ever listen to the lady here?
27 officers have been injured in the latest violence. Well, France has stepped up security measures around the temporary migrant camp, mobilising 250 police officers to end the disturbances. And we can show you a video here recorded on a mobile phone during the first night of the unrest. Fires can be seen burning in the distance there, and locals said the protesting refugees set fire to tents as well as clothes. It came after police tear gas crowds trying to reach a road leading to the Channel Tunnel. We heard from one local who witnessed the clashes.
We woke up because our children cried. We heard loud noises that shook the windows and walls. We couldn't go out. When we tried to do something, they threatened us. We had to stay quiet and barricaded ourselves in the house, close the shutters, windows, everything. But I can't live with my children in such circumstances anymore. I'm so afraid. I can't stand it anymore. The real war has already started for me. It's time for the army to intervene, or whoever else. We need help.
Well, for more now on the situation
there it
in LA,
is.
Here's RT's.
There it is. So there is, and ladies and gentlemen, what's taking place is called white flight. White flight. And that means that white European people are being forced to flee their homeland because of this invasion. This French lady says that she cannot live in her homeland anymore because of security threats, because she is fearing that she will be raped, that her children will be assaulted. Now, friends, you're not getting this in mass media, but there is a war going on. There is a war, an invasion of Europa. This is a key part of the clergy plan. It's a key part of the building of the Kingdom of Babylon to destroy national sovereignty, to destroy unique culture, of which religion is a distinct part and a safeguard for many of the evils that invading cultures bring. And this is a fact. Now, of course, German police chief warns of security threat from thousands of migrants entering Europe. Now, basically the way this is being pitched in mainstream media and mass media is that the officials are warning about the rise of right-wing radicalism amongst Germans. Now, Germany is clearly under occupation, and I've got an excellent article here which I'll get to in a moment, which basically says that, look, 70 years after the fall of Nazism, Germany is still an occupied country under military and political domination of Washington. The national press, popularly referred to as the lying press, faithfully echoes the party line in Washington. Germany's spineless politicians, popularly renamed from people's representatives to traitors of the people, are no better. And so we are unable to see what is actually happening there, as the European Union, in the words of Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, is committing suicide by letting in invading hordes from the Middle East. And this is the reality of what we see taking place. Now, the idea that politicians are saying, well, there's a danger of the rise of right-wing radicalism. Let's get this in context. The right-wing radicalism is largely a reaction to the left-wing communist assault on the culture. And so you will see this phrase commonly rolled out in mass media, the rise of the right wing, meaning people that actually like their culture, people that actually want to keep Germany as white European country. Now, as we've watched this over the recent years, and this September, since September, there has really been, of course, the invasion has turned up in full swing. On Australian media now, basically you hear nothing. It's just basically gone now. They've gone on to other things. But the invasion is still taking place. Now, a part of this so-called right-wing radicalism, Austrians and many other nationals within their countries are stocking up on weapons.
Handguns and rifle sales are spiking in Austria, with some shops reporting they're even running out of stock. Here's what one shop owner says.
Ja, das kann ich bestätigen, dass in Österreich die Waffen verstärkt nachgefragt werden. Ich habe meine Umsätze im September verdoppelt und im Oktober 15 noch einmal verdoppelt, obwohl der Oktober noch nicht vorbei ist. Die meisten Menschen, die in den letzten Wochen zu mir kommen, um sich beraten zu lassen oder um Waffen zu kaufen, geben als Grund an, ich frage jedes Mal danach, die allgemein vorherrschende spezielle Situation, die wir gerade in Österreich haben.
A and the current situation mentioned there is the influx of refugees entering Austria. Up to 8,000 cross the border every day, with authorities saying that number could soon rise to 12,000. In the face of the migrant crisis, the country's government seems to be retreating on some of its own ideas on how to tackle the problem. 2 months ago, the Austrian Chancellor was an outspoken critic of Hungary's initiative to build fences on its border. Werner Faymann said then that it would solve nothing. Fast forward to the end of October, and the Chancellor announces the start of a special construction at its border with Slovenia. That while still insisting that fences have no place in Europe.
Dabei war das Verhalten Österreichs in den vergangenen Tagen nicht in Ordnung.
So here is a strategy of tension, ladies and gentlemen, being rolled out on the ground. Now, look, it doesn't matter which country you look at. Croatia, under siege. Slovenia, army, unrolls razor wire on Croatian border in a bid to manage asylum seeker influx. Slovenia's army has begun rolling out razor wire along the border with Croatia. It suddenly found itself on the Balkans route taken by thousands of asylum seekers heading to Northern Europe after Hungary sealed its borders with Croatia and Serbia. More than 170,000 asylum seekers have passed through the small EU member state of 2 million people since mid-October, and all but a handful heading for Austria and beyond. That's why Austrians are stocking up with weapons. Austrians are stocking up with weapons because they fear police and security forces are unable to actually control what's taking place. When you look at a village in Germany of 110 people, where 750 of these invaders are going to be put there by Merkel, by the local governments. And friends, what has taken place here that it has become so obvious that the governments are not interested in actually looking after their own people? And anyone who thinks, I mean, most people listening to this program would be more informed than the masses that actually think that governments are there for them, that governments are there to actually protect their people. This European invasion shows how far down decades of programming by mass media, especially since World War II, has conditioned the people to think that multiculturalism is a good thing, is a thing of the future, we must accept it, and that national borders and sovereignty is finished. It's over. So you see a village of 105 people in Germany that has 750 people dumped on it. Let me ask you, ladies, if there was 650 young men between 20 and 35 put in your neighbourhood and there's 40 women, how do you think those 40 women are going to feel? This is the reality, friends. This is the reality of what's taking place. And another part of the problem is teenage brides among the refugees. Now, once again, here is the clash of cultures. And we have documented that Islam, under Muhammad's teachings, approved of men, adult men, taking young children as brides and consummating those marriages via sexual intercourse, which Muhammad did as an example for his people with Aisha, who was 9 years old. Now, this problem is becoming a further problem in Europe as some of these people turning up are turning up with teenage brides. In other words, they're having sex with these girls who are like 12, 13, 14, less. Listen to this.
Well, thousands of refugees have been welcomed in the Netherlands, where its open door policy has in fact opened the door to a growing problem too, because some migrants are bringing child brides with them in direct violation of Dutch laws. Peter Oliver has got the story.
In the refugee camps of Lebanon and Jordan, children are having to grow up fast.
In 2011, the percentage of girls in Jordan that got married before the age of 18 was 12% of all registered marriages. Now we estimate that 25% of all marriages are actually marriages happening when the girl is below the age of 18 among Syrian refugees.
When refugees in these relationships come to Europe, particularly those between teenage girls and much older men, it complicates an already difficult situation.
Well, this is as close as I'm able to get to this particular refugee camp here in the Netherlands. It was here in the summer of this year that a 14-year-old Syrian girl and her husband in his mid-20s were staying. Well, they've since left the camp and are believed to have left the Netherlands.
It's horrendous. I think it's ridiculous. By any law on this earth. But it's a question of religion, I think, and cultural difference.
Now, this is the thing. You see, now, the local white community that has a Christian background realizes that this teaching is barbaric, it is not humane, by any sort of estimate or reasonable assessment. And yet the white culture is now forced to accept this, right? This is a forced invasion, friends. This is why culture is important. Because in a Christian culture, as we have in the West, the Christian culture will be forced to disarm and change its values to accommodate the forced invasion.
Princess, I think in the refugee crisis now, it's not the main issue, actually.
Dutch lawmakers are rushing through legislation that will close a loophole that had allowed child brides to live with their husbands in the Netherlands. But some want to see things go further.
It's hard to see how you can stop this, except for closing the borders, which at the moment almost 80% of the people want, but the government is still not doing this.
Notice that 80% of the people in the Netherlands want the government to close the borders. Now, this is what we've spoken about regularly, is that there is a complete disconnect between government, academia and media, which really form the governing power of society, and the people. But the people think that elections equals democracy. Now, as I spoke with Mike Holt last week, and I don't agree with many things that he stands for. However, the idea of citizens initiate referendums, to me, is a very, very important aspect to getting the governance back to the people. But as I spoke to you in my last broadcast, is that I don't have any hope in any political remedy to halt the development of the Kingdom of Babylon. Now, that clearly that's because I have a biblical worldview that looks at a prophetic timeline, and I see where we are on that timeline, and I see that the kingdom we are in is ruled by the Prince of Darkness, and God is preparing his people within that kingdom to extract out of this kingdom at the time appointed, and that there will be no reformation back to Christian values or any form of honest government within this earth. It will not happen. And as I've said, there's not a government on the earth that is not betraying its people in some way. And the people of the Netherlands, the Dutch people, are starting to say, well, hang on, we've had this open door policy, we can't have it anymore. These people are coming in here with 12 and 13 year old brides.
Authorities who work with child brides say the change in the law may drive them underground.
The problem of a traumatized young mother, even a child, bringing up other children, her own children, that's really problematic, because the trauma will go to the babies, to the young children. They will not be getting a proper upbringing. There's a danger there that we create new problems for these children.
Peter Oliver, RT, the Netherlands.
Can you believe this? I mean, friends, can't you feel for these? Imagine these young girls that are subjected to these men, you know, 10, 12 years old. I mean, fair dinkum. Do you want this in your country? I don't. I don't want it in my country. But, of course, if you resist, you're a racist. See, you must accept child brides now, because this is a part of the culture that your government is developing under the clergy plan. Young parents out there with young daughters. Now, I had young daughters once. They're not young anymore, but once they were young. And I can tell you, when they were 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, well, I was watching them. And if a man had have come along and ever looked at them or proposed to them in any way at age 12, I would have got him out of the way real quick. Right? That's what a father does. He protects his children. He protects his daughters against pariahs, against sexual deviancy. That's what we believe in Australia. That's what we believe in Western Christian culture, that it is pedophilia. It is sexual deviancy to want to have sex with a child. But of course, under Islam and Sharia law, this is sanctioned. Now, while the people are rising up in the Netherlands once again, police seized offensive Muhammad cartoons during a demonstration by the Dutch branch of the Patriotic European Against the Islamization of the West movement. The rally, which attracted around 150 supporters, criticized the Islamization of the Netherlands, with demonstrators also expressing their support for the Freedom Party of Geert Wilders, a noted critic of Islam. Now, for those of you who haven't followed Geert Wilders' story, he's been under police and security protection for the last 10 years. He lives in a fortress because he is speaking out against the fact that Islam is not compatible with Western Christian culture. And therefore, he receives death threats continually. There's a price on his head, right? Now, in this protest that took place, the police said that they were carrying insulting banners. One such banner said, "The Quran is poison," while another claimed, "Islamization is the EU euthanasia. Video footage emerged of police removing Muhammad cartoons, although their ultimate fate is unknown. The Pegida marches started in Dresden in Germany last year as evening strolls through the city every Monday to protect against militant and political Islam. The marches soon grew and spread across the country, but died down again at the start of this year to point where most commentators assume the movement had petered out. And this is what we are going to continue to see, this strategy of tension. And you will see what the mass media calls the rise of the right. It's actually patriotic people that want to protect their culture and their country. Now, I do not in any way sanction the mass media projection of the skinhead, tattooed neo-Nazi. You know, while there are people that would fit that category, that doesn't mean that everyone that wants to actually protect their people should be labelled as such, although that is the way that the mass media projects it. Now, there's another issue here, and that is on the island of Lesbos. Now, I have a very good friend, listener to this broadcast, who was born and grew up on the island of Lesbos. He is a Greek, and he's been in Australia for many years, all his life, really. His parents come here. And this is the island he grew up on. Now, Lesbos hasn't got anywhere else to bury the people that are dying.
The Greek island of Lesbos has become a grim reality of Europe's struggle with the influx of newcomers. A local mayor has told us they're running out of burial space for the scores of refugees drowning in their attempts to get to Europe.
At these days, we don't have enough space to bury them. At the moment, we have more than 60 bodies at the morgue. We've even placed containers outside in order to store the rest of the bodies until we can bury them at the new cemetery, but there is simply not enough space.
The waters around the Greek islands have proven fatal for hundreds of people, including children and infants. Lesbos became one of the main migrant crisis spots in Europe earlier this year. Thousands have been heading there from Turkish shores, making the dangerous journey in a variety of boats, typically those small, overcrowded ones.
And there it is. See, Lesbos has nowhere else to bury the dead. They've got no more room. Now, finally, ask yourself why. Why would millions of men, the majority of them young, suddenly and collectively decide to leave their families behind, leave their country, travel thousands of miles and head for either Germany, Austria or Sweden, ignoring all of the other safe countries on the way? Who told them that this would be worth it? Where did they all get the money to pay for it? Why was there no effort on any border to stop them? Why did this not start earlier? After all, the Middle East has been a war zone for years, ever since the USA exploited 9/11 to start spreading democracy. How could this happen within days, weeks at most? Remember the picture of the little boy washed up on the beach? Remember, that's when it happened. Did the first 100,000 send a message to the rest that it was okay for them to come too? And if so, how did this happen? Look at the character of the average refugee. They are all well-fed, well-clothed, confident young men showing no signs of stress or hardship. And why are they leaving their families behind? Do they know their wives and children can follow them later? If so, how do they know this? Why do these men not want to stay behind and rescue their country? Why do they all own high-quality mobile phones, charged seamlessly with endless minutes? It's clear that these refugees have been briefed on exactly what kind of social benefits they can demand. And we've listened to reporters that I spoke to, our friend Patrick earlier, and the lady he had interviewed had been there and said that they were demanding every single aspect of benefit they could get. Every single aspect. The political solution is obvious. It's to soak every city and town in Germany, Austria and Sweden with people of unknown origin and intention, flanked by a press hailing the process, underestimating their numbers and suppressing the reports of crime committed by the refugees, damning and demonising every form of opposition as neo-Nazi or right-wing. Every branch of government, all authorities and every single NGO involved, in concert with academia and the press, are standing together against the overwhelming indignation of the people. 80% polled in nearly all these European countries don't want this invasion. So you have the government, NGOs, academia, mass media, implementing censorship, propaganda, hate speech, defamation, an open rejection of basic democratic rights against any opposition. All those issues, friends, are exploding right now. So, friends, what we are witnessing is the rebuilding of the Kingdom of Babylon, the destruction of sovereign borders. The biblical narrative is taking place right before us. Upon the nations, distress of nations. I'm glad that I understand what the future holds and the God that holds it. And I hope that you do. Until next time, thank you for joining me and goodbye.